Blog Talk Radio.
Well, let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses. Under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The political, the economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out. And you and I are in a double trap, because not only do we lose by taking our money someplace else and spending it, when we try and spend it in our own community, we're trapped because we haven't had sense enough to set up stores and control the businesses of our community. The man who's controlling the stores in our community is a man who doesn't look like we do. He's a man who doesn't even live in the community. So you and I, even when we try and spend our money in the block where we live or the area where we live, we're spending it with a man who, when the sun goes down, takes that basket full of money in another part of the town. So we're trapped, double trapped, triple trapped. Anywhere we go, we find that we're trapped. And every kind of solution that someone comes up with is just another trap. But the political and economic philosophy of black nationalism, the economic philosophy of black nationalism shows our people the importance of setting up these little stores and developing them and expanding them into larger operations. Woolworth didn't start out big like they are today. They started out with a dime store and expanded and expanded and expanded until today they're all over the country and all over the world, and they're getting some of everybody's money. Now, this, what you and I and General Motors, the same way, didn't start out like it is. It started out just a little rat race type operation, and it expanded and expanded until today it's where it is right now. And you and I have to make a start. And the best place to start is right in the community where we live. So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community, what we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community. And once you can create some employment in the community where you live, it will eliminate the necessity of you and me having to act ignorantly and disgracefully boycotting and picketing some cracker someplace else trying to beg him for a job. Anytime you have to rely upon your enemy for a job, you're in bad shape. He is your enemy. Anything, you wouldn't be in this country if some enemy hadn't kidnapped you and brought you here. On the other hand, some of you think you came here on the Mayflower. So as you can see, brothers and sisters, today, this afternoon, it's not our intention to discuss religion. We're going to forget religion. If we bring up religion, we'll be in an argument. And the best way to keep away from arguments and differences, as I said earlier, put your religion at home, in the closet. Keep it between you and your God. Because if it hasn't done anything more for you than it has, you need to forget it anyway. Whether you are a Christian or a Muslim or a nationalist, we all have the same problem. They don't hang you because you're a Baptist. They hang you because you're black. They don't attack me because I'm a Muslim. They attack me because I'm black. They attack all of us for the same reason. All of us catch hell from the same enemy. We're all in the same bag, in the same boat. We suffer political oppression, economic exploitation, and social degradation. All of them from the same enemy. The government has failed us. You can't deny that. Anytime you live in the 20th century, 1964, and you walking around here singing, "We shall overcome," the government has failed us. This is part of what's wrong with you. You do too much singing. Today it's time to stop singing and start swinging. You can't sing up on freedom, but you can swing up on some freedom. Cassius Clay can sing, but singing didn't help him to become the heavyweight champion of the world. Swinging helped him. But this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we turn have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy, it's-already-too-late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it, you can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. You can stay in any kind of civic organization that you belong to and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. You can be an atheist and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. This is a philosophy that eliminates the necessity for division and argument. Because if you're black, you should be thinking black. And if you're black and you're not thinking black at this late date, well, I'm sorry for you. Once you change your philosophy, you change your thought pattern. Once you change your thought pattern, you change your attitude. Once you change your attitude, it changes your behavior pattern. And then you go on into some action. As long as you got a sit-down philosophy, you'll have a sit-down thought pattern. And as long as you think that old sit-down thought, you'll be in some kind of sit-down action. They'll have you sitting in everywhere. It's not so good to refer to what you're going to do as a sit-in. That right there castrates you. Right there it brings you down. What goes with it? What think of the image of someone sitting? An old woman can sit. An old man can sit. A chump can sit. A coward can sit. Anything can sit. Well, you and I have been sitting long enough, and it's time today for us to start doing some standing and some fighting to back that up. When we look at other parts of this earth upon which we live, we find that black, brown, red, and yellow people in Africa and Asia are getting their independence. They're not getting it by singing, "We shall overcome." No, they're getting it through nationalism. It is nationalism that brought about the independence of the people in Asia. Every nation in Asia gained its independence through the philosophy of nationalism. Every nation on the African continent that has gotten its independence brought it about through the philosophy of nationalism. And it will take black nationalism that to bring about the freedom of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country where we have suffered colonialism for the past 400 years. America is just as much a colonial power as England ever was. America is just as much a colonial power as France ever was. In fact, America is more so a colonial power than they, because she's a hypocritical colonial power behind it. What is 20th? What do you call second-class citizenship? Why, that's colonization. Second-class citizenship is nothing but 20th century slavery. How are you going to tell me you're a second-class citizen? They don't have second-class citizenship in any other government on this earth. They just have slaves and people who are free. Well, this country is a hypocrite. They try and make you think they set you free by calling you a second-class citizen. No, you're nothing but a 20th century slave. Just as it took nationalism to move, to remove colonialism from Asia and Africa, it'll take black nationalism today to remove colonialism from the backs and the minds of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country. And 1964 looks like it might be the year of the ballot or the bullet. Why does it look like it might be the year of the ballot or the bullet? Because Negroes have listened to the trickery and the lies and the false promises of the white man now for too long. And they're fed up. They've become disenchanted. They've become disillusioned. They've become dissatisfied. And all of this has built up frustrations in the black community that makes the black community throughout America today more explosive than all of the atomic bombs the Russians can ever invent. Whenever you got a racial powder keg sitting in your lap, you're in more trouble than if you had an atomic powder keg sitting in your lap. When a racial powder keg goes off, it doesn't care who it knocks out the way. Understand this, it's dangerous. And in 1964, this seems to be the year. Because what can the white man use now to fool us? After he put down that march on Washington, and you see all through that now, he tricked you, had you marching down to Washington. Yes, had you marching back and forth between the feet of a dead man named Lincoln and another dead man named George Washington, singing, "We Shall Overcome." He made a chump out of you. He made a fool out of you. He made you think you were going somewhere and you end up going nowhere but between Lincoln and Washington. So today our people are disillusioned. They've become disenchanted. They've become dissatisfied. And in their frustrations they want action. And in 1964, you see this young black man, this new generation, asking for the ballot or the vote. That old Uncle Tom action is outdated. The young generation don't want to hear anything about the odds are against us. What do we care about odds? When this country here was first being founded, there were 13 colonies. The whites were colonized. They were fed up with this taxation without representation. So some of them stood up and said, "Liberty or death." Though I went to a white school over here in Mason, Michigan. The white man made the mistake of letting me read his history books. He made the mistake of teaching me that Patrick Henry was a patriot. And George Washington wasn't nothing nonviolent about old Pat or George Washington. Liberty or death was what brought about the freedom of whites in this country from the English. They didn't care about the arts. Why, they faced the wrath.
Is the messenger group X-Clan. Here's the nine. The movement Black Watch. And when we're not outraged about the oppression upon the black existence, we step to you in blackness. By the way, exist in a state of vainglorious as we are protected by the red, the black, and the green. Heed the words of the brother.
Let us the words, words, the phrases, the paragraphs. Heed masters, day begins class. The science of past is now brought to the rhyme fake. From the scrolls, state of the birthday. God to God, from God to man. Many kings, many leaders, a fist from a hand. They call me militant, now what does this mean? Do I carry a gun to make the army scene? With the cause I never pause, that simply is the brother. Raise the flag, wave the colors. Red, black, green with the key, the difference. Words make a way in the world and the instant. Living to die and I die to live again. 360 degrees. Comprehend. A man getting stronger till he's man no longer. Unearthly state makes the time too shorter. The ever radiant awareness. Born forth the one. Open eyes, strong sun. Practicing priests, standing by what I teach. So you all stand starving as I start to leave. Words are gone. Brought from the Genesis. Will exist, so Armageddon is a witness. The originals built the earth. One must be aggression to learn a basic lesson. Quite majestic, stern within reality. A juggernaut when you tamper with mentality. However, crown, extension and dimension of a brain cell. Bringing health to the cell out. The ever tangled web we weave. Always trying to obtain, no attempt to achieve. Descendants of kings and queens act like justice. Never potential, quarter of the measure. Jealousy of what are we? Become tendency for their thievery. Alright, cool. But no need to pull the trigger, cause that's a fool. I get my words like that in my school. To produce the words that they fool about. It's another way of taking out these sissies. Who may try to extinct my principality. But of course not having madness. From beginning, I'm the end. Observe me. Ignorance is not a trend. So as I beckon, for a few seconds, pull the reins. And the words of the brother. Mastering birds on the verse. Funk is a force I exert. Egyptian, African, now I'm on a black watch. Check my sundial, slipping like the clock. I can catch a shadow as the moon reflects the sun. Creator's eyes make a path of brother one. So now I walk softly and carry a big stick, a bird stick, so you natives from the lick. Then brings the funk and spreads jam to the wheat bread. And the folk of this one vainglorious, unearthly resistance, strong with persistence. Grand verbal allocation, tribal connection, pyramids, witness the funk bearer. Vibe sharer, not the error. Brother is balanced like the scales of Thor. And neither my demand makes stone too far. Corrupt all systems, positive poison of me. Some call it onk, it's a key. Black is a color while blackness, state of a mind state. But how many of you fake? Today, Brother J can find a better way, so be it. Plan it down and make it say I serve a purpose. Yet I'm not the G.I. Joe, I am the brother. Yo, I can never swear a purpose. Step to the mic and stage area as I drop the science that breaks the clock barrier. Words of old make me more than a beginner. The key opens knowledge and plays in the antenna. American a man, African a brother. Don't forget the land cause the birth is from the mother. A vibe is in place, obtained and discovered. Tune in your audio and hear your words of brother.
Yo, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, step off. It's a
black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly radio, weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, People's Political Party National Chair Nat Turner and co-host myself, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland. And also our sister, I'm the National Minister of Communication on the ones and twos. Call in each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, ways of a warrior. We're going to open up our lines to our chairman, Black Power. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, Black Power, comrade. Right
Black
on.
Power, comrade.
Yeah, this topic we chose was chosen by our Minister of Communication, and I wanted people to know that, and that's the title she chose, top. Very interesting. Sister choose a topic like that, and then make any brother. But the ways of a warrior, from a African perspective, like how we understand the structure of like where we derive from as a people, the whole clan thing, and in the African society, there's different classes, like sectors, but not the type of class that, not to be confused with the European entanglements among themselves, where the relationship is virtually irreconcilable due to a particular class of whites who want to dominate the rest of the whites and place them in these categories, be the ones who are in control of all the power, the means of production, the land and the property. What we honor is a warrior class within the kingdom. Of course, there's the elders, and some European like to refer to as a chief. What we know is a king and the queen that guide and steer the nation. There's also an artisan class, those who perform certain trades within society. A blacksmith class, those who create smelt metals. And of course, as I said, the warrior class being necessary. And it's always been understood that within any established society, you must have protection, or you must have an entity, a body can defend from alien outside forces, who seek to take over or reduce the population to nothingness. The young who are at certain stages in their lives, they go through rites of passages, various types of performances, rituals, coming of age, and being initiated into that class. what comes to mind, of course, you know, when you know, speak in these terms, it sometimes it just it's just unavoidable, you know, to express how these rites of passage, you know, have gone all around the world due to African people's, you know, populating the planet. And, of course, also adopting ways and customs and practices, rites that have been popularized under later so-called religions, dealing in particularly with the male, with the youth. You know, such as, for instance, the white segment refers to itself as Jewish, where they have the bar mitzvah for the boys and the bat mitzvah for the girls at this stage of 13 years old. The number is very symbolic and very meaningful, carries a lot of weight. As I said, you know, these crossing over, so to speak, the beginning of the road or the path to manhood. And so this is the early stages of the ways of the warrior leading to that stage of a maturity as a warrior. Many things come to mind, and I'll try my best to explain it, to put it into proper perspective and to make sense of it all. You know, it's so much more to the physical. You know, you normally, you know, these Hollywood movies showing, you know, young Africans with this stereotypical image, you know, of running around with loincloths and spears. You know, without us even understanding that the spear itself is very meaningful and symbolic, and it has a very deep, powerful meaning within the warrior class. And of course, due to the episodes of colonialism, the displacement of African nations and the being colonized, taken from out of certain meaningful things that had been meaningful to us for as long as we can remember. The ways of a warrior. To learn certain discipline along the way to the rites of passage, initiations into the brotherhood. And in that brotherhood, there's always the one, the older person in between him and the elder, who gives instruction on how to be a warrior in all this, various facets. In African societies, in indigenous African societies, you know, there's a lot of proverbs, you know, that the elders use to instruct the warrior as far as his duties, and of course to protect the community. These translations or these transferences from you know, the in the so-called diaspora, you know, the spreading around by force of the African nations via the slave trade. And in a lot of cases, in some cases, or in specific, in some places, in some parts of the world, more specifically, what we can refer to as the Caribbean, or what is now known as South America. There are certain things that we were able to hold on to. And what I'm trying to say is, from the continent to America, and when you look in the communities, the neighborhoods, whatever you want to call them, you know, some of us refer to them as occupied colonies or little Vietnams. And the ways of a warrior lies within, you know, the male population, the youth, pre-adult, and of course, you know, early adult and what have you. And increase what's already there, you know, the bravery, you know, being brave, and so to try to instill what we knew on the continent and to transfer from the continent to here. And of course it takes, you know, diligent study, you know, discipline, and to be able to get, you know, the male segment, the population here, that would be our warrior class. And so to get them to understand the ways of a warrior, like how we understand it, where we come from, our history, our culture, our heritage, you know. To develop it takes a certain understanding. And so when you look at the thing that comes to mind, and I'm trying not to, you know, like put the cart before the horse, but sometimes, you know, you end up doing it because of trying to get people to understand, like, for us to survive, you know, for us to exist as a people, you know, what it takes, how important it is to for those who have been advanced to this warrior class, unless there's some other type of understanding even unbeknown to myself. You know, one can say you can take a 12-year-old, you know, a 10-year-old, and he's a warrior. His brother that's 40 years old, you know, he's still a warrior. A brother that's 50, you know, he's still a warrior. You know, but the way I've learned and the way I've understood it, from where, like, our roots come from, and how we, you know, the type of structure, you know, the discipline, the instruction, the proverbs, the type of activities that one must perform, you know, in order to be accepted, you know, into that warrior class. Africa is indigenous Africa. It was very, you know, diverse. You know, so there's a number of different things that take place in different, you know, African regions or whatever, you know, among the Igbo, the Zulu, the Asante, you know, so-called tribes. In Central Africa, like the Sudan, where you have the Shilluk tribe, and how they develop the warrior and what his ways must be. The Nuer tribe, you spell that N-U-E-R, in also in like would be considered like the harder half of Central Africa. And there's a particular type of ceremonial practice takes place that involves the spear, and the spear is a symbol of the ultimate power being given its name, and this name has a connection with the god that the Nuer know in their dialect or their language that they speak. And it's so much more than just the spear. The spear represents power. And this is what the warrior must understand. And he could never take it for granted. In America, it would be considered as, you know, getting a big head. You know, getting beside oneself, losing focus of what the real object is. And, of course, the objective. It is the object that gives him the objective. It is the object that gives him the objective. And that object is what the spear means in its value, that power. And that power can only come from the same source that created the tree from which that spear could derive to be carved. And it's a whole intricate affair, you know. And what I'm trying to give like an example of the foundation, which could only lead to if there's an invasion, an intrusion into that particular world. You know, and this is why the Europeans, as much as they hate to write about it or record it, put it in these big blockbuster movies. You know, as much as they hate admitting that the ways of a warrior took a heavy toll on them in their imperialist policies, you know, in Southern Africa, what is, you know, this fictitional region called South Africa. You know, that's artificial boundaries that have been set up and given some jurisdictional name, South Africa. South Africa, Africa. There's no such thing. You know, but these regions, Matabeleland, Zululand, Basutoland, you know, that were known to, you know, the indigenous black and brown groups that were there. And the Zulu clan, the Zulu nation. Some people say Shaka Zulu, but it's Shaka the Zulu, you know. And Shaka went through the same process to have reached, you know, his maturity stage coming through the warrior class, you know, these rites of passage and stuff that some of us here in this part of the world can take for granted, you know. But again, you know, if we talk about the ways of a warrior, that can only be built in a traditional indigenous sense. So the transference of it from the African continent to what is now known as the Caribbean, this dude named Columbus or what have you, wanting to name, you know, that part of Hispaniola, whatever, Jamaica and Haiti and Santo Domingo and all these places. And there's a particular type of structure that was not able to be broken, you know, and so that connection remained from, you know, the continent to here. And there's been those of us who have went back trying to redeem ourselves as so-called black men, black males, you know, so-called African-American men. And there's been a handful of us that have gone back to take a deep, intricate look at this and try to rebirth it, reconstitute it here in this cesspool called America. And one of those brothers, the brother named Walimu Bomani Baruki, and he's written, you know, a number of books to make an attempt to reclaim our youth and our young adult population in using the ways of a warrior construct in indigenous Africa to reclaim their lives, to place their lives back into their own hands, which is necessary, is a must. That attempt is made at whatever cost or price, but to battle the Eurocentrism that has engulfed us as a people collectively, to turn away from something that has been meaningful to us since the beginning. But to get back to like how the Nuer, what they do, the tell you, man, it's so many things, and I don't want to. I hope I don't skip over them or miss anything. But you know, a lot of times you can have a lot of things that you want to say is so much, and you have to, like, you know, space it out, like, you know. And, you know, not get ahead of yourself. So this is what I'm trying to do. But of course, you know the concept of the spear, and it's the power invested in the spear, and so this power came from the same soul that created everything, you know, including the spear. And this spear, in essence, is a symbol of that power, of that powerful God.
Black power, Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead. What you got, comrade?
I just want to say, if you want to call in to participate on the show, if you have any comments, questions, or anything you want to know about People's Political Party as far as the topic or who we are as a people, press 1 to participate. Black Power, Chairman, as you will.
Yeah, right on, right on. Yeah, and like I was saying, you know, that power, and so that newly molded, newly crafted, initiated brother into the warrior caste or class, is given this spear at a certain point. And when he is given that spear, then that spear, in essence, becomes what in Russian parlance is his comrade. And that is, you know, part of the ways of a warrior from an indigenous perspective. And we're going to get to the, you know, to the transference of it, you know what I mean, you know, the crossing of the ocean of it, and what, you know, we should still do, regardless of how long we've been separated from our motherland, our place of origin. Some of us, but that spear becomes his comrade. It is his duty to see to it that spear doesn't get damaged until that spear gets dipped in blood. And that's part that lead to you know, the physical side. You know, if that moment ever arise. Now, of course, here we also are dealing with the particular type of psychology, the particular type of African psychology, which prepares that warrior for other things, such as staring one's enemies in the eyes, so that one's enemies can read your eyes or his eyes, and his enemy understands that he is telling him that he fears him not. And that is the ultimate stage, places that warrior in the realm of a warrior, you know, to defend his jurisdiction, you know, his sovereign region, his kingdom. And of course, there could be no defending any kingdom without understanding that the ways of a warrior also constitute him defending and protecting his family, whether it be his soulmate or his mother, you know, his daughter, Nana, where the Europeans have stole so much from us, you know, but, you know, the women, you know, at all costs, you know, these are some of the ways of a warrior, you know, and like I said, I don't think you know, we can have this topic without understanding, you know, the point of origin. Um, the so many things going through my head right now, but look, just the preparation, where in another case, the initiate has to go and retrieve himself some wood, a nice piece of wood, and he has to carve his own mask. He has to give that wood some shape, a design from nondescript to what the Europeans now know as aestheticism, you know, this intricately carved mask. And that mask is later to be worn in his in a ceremony or ritual. And of course, part of the initiation, the crossing over, the graduating, is why in Catholic school, you know, you have, you know, like middle Catholic school, where that school only goes up to the 8th grade. And of course, you know, to be in the 8th grade, you know, your year is 13. And this is why you graduate from that stage of Catholic school. And then you enter high school. Okay, well, in African society, this is where they adopted that concept from, whether they want to admit it or not, whether the Catholic Church wants to admit it or not. And this is where they adopted this rites of passage. And so with the mask, you know, he begins to, you know, carve that mask. And around 18, 19 up in there. And it varies, like I said, in you know, certain parts of the continent. But the concept is the same. Now, these numbers are chosen for a specific reason, of course. You know, these stages or what have you. But he had, when he's done, he has his time and his moment where he begins to take part in the ceremony or ritual. And so taking part in the ceremony ritual, he then learns the footwork of the warrior class. Okay. And so when he learns the footwork, this footwork, whether we are realizing it or not, is this footwork that dramatizes his mode or pattern of defense. And it's an incredible, I don't know if I want to use the word concept, you know, but it's an incredible ritual. You know, some people would refer to this as a simulation. And so you hear the chants, you know. And you have to see it, you know, like really, like get it, you know. But it's phenomenal, you know. And so when they're doing the ritual dance, you know, and at the same time they're calling on that same power. You know, where among Nur, and symbolized in and by that spirit. And so this is what you see. This is what takes place. This is what takes place. Now, in, let's say like Brazil, which is one of the most vital, important places where we actually were able to maintain a lot of our rituals, rites of passage, you know, in Haiti, in Haiti, you know, and we talked about, you know, Haiti, you know, during the last Black August piece, right, and what the Europeans faced there, they were dubbed or referred to as the Maroons. The Maroons who struck for their liberation using guerrilla tactics, guerrilla warfare, along with the unbroken line of our African understanding of the warrior. Of course, this disdain, you know, this hatred for brutal oppression, and so that was able to be utilized, which is why they were successful. So in Brazil or places like Haiti, whatever, you know, the Caribbean, this certain type of style of movement, you know, capoeira. You know, if you ever, you may be, let's say, go on, one of these, YouTube or whatever, you know, and see, you know, what I'm talking about here. Okay. And this is something that the Europeans will look at and see, like some type of dancing style, but without, you know, due to their, you know, their ignorance, they don't realize what they're witnessing. It's a fighting style. It's a movement. You know, and not only that, also I want to say awaken the spirit, but it's bigger than awakening the spirit. This word escapes me right now. To try to describe it, but it's sort of calling on the spirit. It's sort of for extra, you know, an extra thing, you know, in order to deal with the enemy. Okay, and this is part of the ways of a warrior. Okay, and that's part of it. And of course, the other factor, such as body paint. Okay. And you know, I'm going there with it. You know, because, you know, people go, you know, some black, you know, black people, they claim Africa. You know, they claim Africa. You know, but a lot of us don't really embrace it like we want to claim it due to an infatuation, you know, or and of course it's understandable, you know, but you know, the colonized mind, you know, that's the stage of the struggle. That's part of the struggle, you know, a rejecting, a throwing off of the European view of the world, you know, about you know, a warrior. You know, the Europeans, they say soldier, we say warrior. So there's a difference between the soldier and the warrior. You know, those who understand, we say yes. We say yes because the soldier, in the European parlance of concept, doesn't partake anything but being brought to some controlled environment, and shoot 1,000 rounds at a target in all different ways and formations and whatnot and this, that, and other. You know, they don't go through spiritual witch war. You know, the respect, you know, for the objective. And, but, you know, of course, you know, you'll issue your M16 and the sergeant tell you, hey, like, you get much of so much of this, that, you're going to give me 100, you know, shit like that, you know. And so, like what I was saying about how that spirit becomes that newly found or crystallized warrior's his comrade. Now, the European, and of course, historically, and always has and always will, to get us to believe that he worshipped the spear. The spear, the spear was his god. They have to do that. They have to do that. But they wouldn't dare tell you that their son that went in the military, he's issued his M16, that he worships the M16. It's his god. They wouldn't dare tell you that. But they have to do us that so we can, renounce that, denounce that, and become their soldier, with M16, and defending democracy, defending the free world, we say warrior, they say soldier, one thing is that the warrior has also, and this is very important, and some, we talked about the people political party, about ambition. And there's a proverb that the warrior is made sure of, where it's something like, your ambitions become the object of focus, one can't sleep at night. And this is for a reason. If you become very ambitious as a warrior, then you lose sight of the whole shit. And that is on the road to losing the war. And will forever wallow in failure. This thing about one monkey don't stop no shore or something. We've heard that. there's a similar proverb to that. Pretty much, one warrior doesn't derail the whole nation, but that nation is the warrior. The Chinese concept, when they, the Chinese Revolution, they're great revolutionary leader Sun Yat-sen and Mao Zedong, where they put the we before the I, and the I had to become secondary to the we. And this is one of the important facets in the ways of a warrior, because he sees the larger objective more than he sees himself. He can be excellent in combat, but poor because of his ambitions. Now, to transfer that to America and to apply that to today, and like I said, one has to go back. You know, so to go back and then to learn that is to, of course, embrace one's heritage, one's culture, you know, to save our black males, or this, you know, this notion about, you know, black males dying and all this bullshit. I remember hearing when I was a teenager, you know, no such thing, you know, but however, to reestablish the ways of a warrior among our black male population here in this country, which would mean a rejection of the European concept of a soldier. Now, let me say this here. You know, I encounter young brothers on the streets, you know, all the time. And there are instances where I've even referred to them a soldier, you know, which may seem like a contradiction, you know. In my understanding, because I'm in this part of the world, in this country here, you know, and these concepts, these adjectives, these, you know, these words and slogans and what have you, and I see them as that because of the understanding of the state, you know, the perfect soldier, you know. And so to take that and instill within them what we mean, what we understand by the ways of a warrior, you know, and encapsulate all the, you know, the different experiences, you know, that we go through, you know, in the occupied colonies that's been, you know, prescribed for us, you know. And this is a reconstitution of our humanity and understanding the ways of a war, you know, which first and foremost to win back our humanity. And when one wins back his humanity, what happens to him? You know, he becomes something other than what he had usually been. In some cases, on the lowest plane of existence, in the so-called seven planes, and of course the lowest state of existence is the animal plane, and this is what you're seeing in the so-called mean streets of America, because they've been robbed of their humanity. And so when one wins back his humanity from a perspective, an indigenous perspective, and one so much so not as a slight bit of alteration by trying to insert some type of European thought process into the equation. You know, liberation is liberation. And we believe that, you know, to go forward, to understand ourselves, how we ought to relate to one another under what system, then we should look back to the motherland. You know, Europeans are always looking back to Greece and Rome, you know, when it comes to celebrating, you know, their great philosophers that they teach in the universities, you know, Aristotelian philosophy, the Platonic thought, Neoplatonic thought. And so they celebrate that, name the months after Roman emperors, you know, Augustus, you know, Julian, and so forth, you know. And so we should look back to the motherland and institute the ways of a warrior from that perspective. Collectively win back our humanity as black men, as black males. And of course, there's a particular group that is always the focus of attention on the part of the state. And of course, that'll be, you know, what we'd be considered today in America as the warrior class. You know? And so there must be a constant effort to prevent this from taking place. And of course, it will remind me of, you know, the counterintelligence program. You know, the objective of the counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO for short, where J. Edgar Hoover, leader of the FBI at the time, had said that the basic objective was to prevent the rise of a black messiah, you know, one who can electrify the people, especially the youth, because they see, and some of them understand what we're talking about. Some of them know this shit because they've studied it themselves. You know, one thing about Europeans will study your shit more than you. They'll go and learn African languages that you don't know. You know, they'll go and learn rituals and even practice these rituals amongst themselves behind closed doors and try to make that shit work for them. They'll take a concept, the Bantu concept of the one, the unity, the community, you know, man, woman, child, you know, which can be summed up as communalism, and apply it in a business. The Japanese, the Chinese, you know, they've taken Sun Tzu's art of war and have applied it in Chinese business, in Chinese corporations, Japanese corporations, Subaru, Yokohama Company, the CEOs. You know, they've taken five of the planks of Sun Tzu's art of war and instilled them into their economic sector and outwit and outsmart these Europeans, which is why the Europeans hate them and, of course, have to, you know, use propaganda against them. You know, but that is the sole purpose of preventing the type of collectivity among the warrior class that we have here in America. And as I said, the ways of a warrior, also the camaraderie, the relationship with his fellow brother as a warrior, and the oaths they take and practice and live as a way of life, which in ancient Kemi was known as Maya. And in some parts of Africa, it could be known as Mia, Maya, Maya, Naya, Nia, or Ma. You know, sort of like the samurai. You know, the seven ways of Bushido. You know, the seven samurai codes that they live by. And this is the same way of life, a discipline that makes up the ways of a warrior. And of course, as I said, it would be useless to be a warrior and not defend women from attack, the respect for women, seeing women not as objects or objectifying women, the women being subjected, you know, to the whims of the male, as is done in this country, as is done in this cesspool, you know, and that would be the ultimate, in a sense, betrayal of the ways of reward, in addressing his elders, you know, these titles that a lot of us take for granted, you know, such as Baba, you know, the structure, you know, Nana, Dada, you know, when it comes to the elders, you know, to the women, you know, and that's very important, you know, as part of you know, the warrior class. In other parts of you know, there's the where I talked about the artisan or the blacksmith, you know, who knows how to shape you know, metal, and passing on the particular type of tools or what have you, you know, to the warrior in order for him to be able to create, right? And then I spoke about the body paint in other parts of Africa, and it's pretty much in general, you know, I could say. But, you know, understanding what, you know, here in this country, or even like in military sense, you know, those who learn hand-to-hand combat, these different parts of the body referred to as pressure points, okay? When these warriors set out to go to war, they extract from the earth a sort of reddish looking kind of powder, you know, that'll remind you of a powder, but it's grinded into a powder, this earth substance, and it's of course, you know, used water, oil, certain types of oils, what have you, and you know, mix this powder into a liquid, and then you know, they take the liquid, they can dip their fingers, what have you, and you know, draw circles or other types of designs over these points of the body, like, for instance, the heart, which is pretty much like the heart chakra, you know, doing protection rituals. You know, and this is what you'll see even maybe in some displays of African photojournalism, where the Europeans, you know, they get these grants and these whatever, you know, you know, to travel to certain parts of indigenous Africa and, you know, take these photos and able to go amongst the so-called tribes and take photos. National Geographic, you know, I was always one of their, like, pet peeves, like, you know, then photos or pictures of indigenous so-called tribes, you know, to the African, you know, but, okay, but, yeah, So that's another plank in the ways of a warrior, you know. And of course, to instill his mentality, you know. How can I say this? There's certain terminologies, you know, certain words, certain terminologies that are used, you know, and I'm trying to conjure up, you know, a few of them, you know, to give an idea, you know, certain words of in. As when I was talking about the ritual dance, you know, in West Africa, particularly, the calling on of certain godheads. There's been this Eurocentric view, you know, this false notion, you know, of this polytheism thing, you know, and which has had a grave detrimental effect on African people, you know, in the diaspora, you know. Of course, you know, nobody could have ever come to us and taught us or gave us the one God, you know, contrary to what they say, or what they profess. You know, the Muslims say that the God that they know has 99 names, that they don't worship 99 gods, but yet their God has 99 names. Well, in Africa, it is the same. And so there's this misunderstanding, you know. And so when we call on Ogun, you know, we're calling on a certain aspect of that great power, which is symbolized in Ogun. You know, when we talk about the sun and the moon and the stars, and we're talking about a symbolized type, which is invested with a power. And we all, well, let me say it like this. If those of us who understand about the low tide and the high tides and how the moon affects, water, you know, have you ever experienced or been on the beach, tide becomes real low, and you can walk out further than what you normally would, where the water would be up to your nose. And so the power, this gravitational pull of the moon, and of course we know what the sun does, you know, plant life. And so it is the power of the sun. Power is a symbol of the God we know. In West Africa, South Africa, ancient Kemet, and Central Africa, and has virtually the same name in some instances. Ra or Re. You know, and these is the forces that the warrior invokes when he sees fit in his growth and development, and of course in battle. Now, of course, we live here in the so-called scientific age, and, you know, the Europeans, they write these books, you know, these colonialized-oriented books on the part of the British and what have you, empire, what have you, the French and you know, the other imperial countries, you know, in documentaries and where they talk about Shaka the Zulu and Sesweyo, you know, some of the African leaders who battled the British and slaughtered them in numerous cases. And, of course, the superiority of the gunpowder weapon as opposed to the spear that had to be thrown. And, of course, in any colonial situation, the adaptation of the powder, gunpowder weapon. And so, of course, there's a due to, of course, the colonialized region. And so that was even more of a fierceness on the part of the warrior class, capturing the enemy's so-called superior weapon. And this is, you know, historic perspective. You know? And so, but the one thing that was never lost was, you know, the ways of the warrior class. And so we say today that it's still relevant and that it can be applied right here in this cesspool. And the discipline, the dedication, and the determination, and of course, always instilled with wisdom, you know, on the part of the elders, you know, sent reminder. In some other instances, how should I put this? Sort of, part of the, you know, the coming to manhood. Two things that come to mind. One is being taken out into the bush, given a certain amount of provision, and left in the bush for a certain amount of time. And what is the reason, the purpose behind leaving one's son in the jungle, in the forest, and bidding him to not return until a certain prescribed time? And there may be the case of him finding his way back, and that in itself is a lesson where he would learn what is the Europeans refer to today as nautical skills, you know, knowing north, east, south, and west, where the Europeans have to artificially do it by creating some little gadget or contraption, and it gives him the direction, where the African needed no such thing. And, of course, the other part is conquering one's fear in the night. A graduation, so to speak, embracing the night, not as one's terrible enemy. And so embracing the night, and of course, there's these objects in the star in the sky at night that we now know as stars, and of course, the moon. And so there's several lessons there. And so he returns, quote unquote, a man. And the other thing in choosing one's soulmate. There's one instance where in parts of Africa, I mentioned the Shilluk and the Nuer, where the cow or cattle or the bull is a sacred animal. The Europeans will have you believing that the Shilluk and the Nuer worships a cow. And of course they have to, in order to keep their Christian religion at the top of the heap. And so these cows, these cattle, are lined up maybe about 20 to 30 of them probably. And so this young man, in order to prove himself worthy, he has to get a running start and jump up on the first cow and run clean across the rest of them without falling in between them to prove his worth. And these are part of the rituals, the rites of passage. That the young man is subjected to. And of course today, you know, there's these modern initiations, you know, for the males, particularly the fraternities in the universities, initiation or the acceptance into the craft of Freemasonry, and particularly for black men, black males, the Prince Hall branch of Freemasonry. And of course, with the fraternities, you see the so-called branding, you know, with the hot iron, with the symbol of one's fraternal order on the end. And of course, in African societies, this has always, had always been done. And, of course, that was another way to emphasize one's bravery. And to, of course, which clan that he belonged to. And they, we call that repping your set. And so, see here, the unconscious connection between the warrior class on the continent and the warrior class in South Central. And so a combining of the two, and in their own words, from their own expert, so-called, in games, in their own words, game over. And so this is the importance, the critical valuable thing that the ways of a warrior are and should be to us as African people. Continually on the continent, even though there's been this a embracing of the Anglo-American science and technology, you know, the turning out of many of us there, trading in one's traditional garb for the top hat, you know, a nice Versace suit and a nice pair of shoes, you know, and to be able to venture into the paid district and to enjoy dinner or to be able to shop at the Anglo-American established malls. The entering of the academic world, being from the Bantu people, being a representative of the Bantu people on behalf of the Europeans. And these subtle moves, whether we understand it or not, is an attack on the ways of a warrior to transform him into a soldier in a organized army to do the bidding of the imperialists. And one forgets his roots, or one compromises or is victimized by the whims of materialist possession. And so a obliteration in one's mind to even have this topic or this subject on one's frontal lobe, you know, now are relegated to the back of his mind. And so it is incumbent upon us, those of us who understand, to push it back to the frontal lobe. Necessary understanding, a requirement, just as a particular type of subject is required for one to receive his or her college degree. And as I said, you know, many proverbs that have been taught to invest in that warrior, you know, that warrior spirit, the spirit of a warrior, you know, his psyche, understanding that in his psyche and with the God he know and knows, powers invested in the guy head types, that he becomes invincible in his psyche. And so therefore defeat is not an option. Defeat is not in his playbook. To conquer his mortal enemy, possessing a certain type of spirit, a spirit being, one who's higher than the usual bullshit, I would say, in this cesspool. And so the Europeans, you know, seek to understand that, to create what they would like to have as the perfect soldier in combat. Now, in this environment, we believe that the highest type of black man can only be a revolutionary. Contrary to what the talking heads will prescribe to our boys and our youth in the name of Douglas Wilder, first black governor of Virginia, Clarence Thomas, Thurgood Marshall, you know, first black Supreme Court judges, Colin Cancer Powell, becoming the first black commander-in-chief of the United States military, and as of late, the first black woman inducted into the Supreme Court, first black woman when it's necessary to call her black, as the first black female vice president, the first black CEO of American Express, and so forth, that our boys can become that. But again, we understand that the highest type of black man in this environment can only be a revolutionary. And being that revolutionary, he must understand his roots. And part of that as a revolutionary, and combining that with the ways of a warrior. Because in this environment, you can only go so far with reform until the Europeans reconstruct what reform forced them to do. And that is why they had what's called the Reconstruction Period. And so they had several Reconstruction Periods. Every time it looked like the blacks were beginning to become their equals, then the whites, the leading class whites, reconstructed their shit. And so the blacks find themselves back in the same position after some moments of glory. And so there's been three reconstructions, if I can remember. And so that's why we believe that the highest type of black man is revolutionary. And bring about the revolutionary transformation of society. And were he to understand the ways of a warrior as an African, then he can heighten his performance. He can heighten his ability. He can heighten his attitude. He can heighten his will to win and know no losing. He can also heighten the will of the people. He can raise the conscious level of the people. He can move the people in a desired manner to achieve what? Liberation. And, of course, then there's, you know, the other thing, you know, what Sun Tzu referred to as the art of war. No. And we only say Sun Tzu because it's been popularized. The Maroons practice the art of war in the guerrilla campaign against the so-called superior French under the guise of Napoleon, the French Empire. And they were able to hang on due to the conditions, to the ways of a warrior, because they practiced African rituals, indigeneity, and that is what got them through. And the Europeans were unable to corral them. And so that's why you have elders like Baba Baruti in trying to reconstitute the ways of a warrior and make it a factor in our liberation struggle as African people a still displaced nation of people after 5 centuries. And so on that note, we've reached the end of the line. You know, another show, another topic. And as we always make it a point, the sole or the main purpose, objective, and agenda in defense of people's radio to politicize and correctly educate our people, to raise our people's conscious level, and to expose the contradictions in the cesspool course that Sharon Fred would say, heighten the contradictions. And so on that note, we want to thank those who have been listening. Stay tuned to next week, In Defense of the People's Radio. One of your hosts, Chairman at People's Political Party, and my co-host, Brother Motherland, and our technician, Sister Ima, on the ones and twos. And we say salute also, salute even to our people, and black power, and all power to the people, and Uhuru. Without a beating our head against the wall and working with